Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a fascinating puzzle, really. How does a company consistently achieve over 50% profit margins in an industry as intensely regulated as aerospace and defense? And get this, all while carrying a truly massive amount of debt. It sounds like a bit of a paradox, doesn't it? But that's precisely the enigma of TransDigm Group, or TDG. Our mission in this deep dive is to take you through a comprehensive investment analysis of TransDigm. We're going to extract the most important insights from our sources. We'll help you understand their distinctive business model, their almost unbelievable competitive advantages, their financial performance, and crucially, the significant risks they carry. Think of this as your shortcut to getting incredibly well informed on, well, one of the most unique companies out there.
Okay, so when we look at TransDigm, it immediately begs the question, how do they consistently pull off those 50%, 50 plus percent profit margins in aerospace while carrying so much debt? Our sources suggest it's because they operate less like a typical aerospace supplier and more like, well, more like a private equity firm operating in plain sight on the stock market. Can you elaborate on that unique approach?
That's exactly it. What's fascinating here is precisely that duality. They've managed to generate truly exceptional historical returns, absolutely. But that success comes with a structural design that amplifies both their inherent strengths and, well, their vulnerabilities too. We're going to explore how they manage this incredibly delicate balance, especially given the challenging dynamics of the aerospace and defense industry. It's really a masterclass in strategic business design.
Okay, so let's start with the absolute core. Who exactly is TransDigm and what do they actually do?
Right. So TransDigm was founded back in 1993, based out of Cleveland, Ohio. Since then, they've grown into a leading global designer, producer, and supplier of highly engineered and proprietary aircraft components. And when we say highly engineered and proprietary, we really mean parts where they own the intellectual property, the IP. That often makes them the only game in town for that specific component.
The only game in town.
Wow. And it's not just any components, is it? Our sources really emphasize that TransDigm's parts are critical for safe aircraft operation. And they can be found on nearly every commercial and military airframe currently in service globally. That ubiquity, I mean, that's a key detail for you to grasp their market penetration. If a plane is flying, odds are it has a TransDigm part on it somewhere. That's just a staggering level of market penetration when you think about the sheer number of aircraft out there.
Precisely. Yeah, it's quite something. To manage this vast operation, they organize it into three primary reporting segments. The first is power and control. This segment develops systems and components that literally provide or control aircraft power. Think complex electronic, fluid, and mechanical motion control technologies, things like actuators, ignition systems, specialized pumps, and critical valves. The parts that ensure the plane moves and functions exactly as intended.
Okay, power and control makes sense. Then you have the airframe segment. What kind of components fall into this category? So the airframe segment covers components for non-power airframe applications. This includes things like engineered latching and locking devices, the very systems that keep doors secure or the landing gear in place. They also make cockpit security systems and safety restraints, all really vital for the integrity and safety of the aircraft itself.
Right, vital stuff. And finally, there's that much smaller segment, non-aviation. What kind of products are found there? Is it significant?
It's smaller, relatively speaking, yes. This segment includes products like seat belts, but for ground transportation, actually, and some specialized components for space applications and industrial gas turbines. So while it's small compared to the others, it does illustrate that their engineering expertise extends beyond just aircraft.
Got it. Now, for anyone trying to understand TransDigm's profitability, it seems absolutely crucial to look at how their revenue breaks down. For fiscal year 2024, their net sales were roughly 40% from defense, 31% from the commercial aftermarket, and 27% from commercial original equipment manufacturer, or OEM. You mentioned that the commercial aftermarket segment, that 31%, is their primary profit engine. For our listeners, what makes that segment so uniquely profitable compared to, say, their OEM business?
That's an excellent question, and it's really key to understanding them. Aftermarket sales involve selling certified replacement parts and providing repair services for the global fleet that's already in service. Our sources explicitly state that these sales historically generate significantly higher gross profit margins than selling parts for brand new planes, the OEM sales. And crucially, they also provide a much more stable recurring revenue stream. Why? Because aftermarket revenue is tied directly to aircraft utilization, how much planes are flying, not the cycles of new aircraft production. So the more planes fly, the more parts eventually need replacing, regardless of whether lots of new planes are being built or not. It's remarkably resilient, that part of the business.
That makes sense. So flight hours drive that revenue. And the strategic foundation underpinning this entire enterprise is an unwavering focus on proprietary products. In fiscal 2024, approximately 90% of their net sales came from products where TransDigm owns the intellectual property. Can you explain why that proprietary status is so fundamental to their advantage?
Absolutely. That proprietary status frequently positions them as the sole source supplier for a given part. This means for many, many components, they're literally the only company certified to produce and supply them. That's exclusivity. It's a fundamental factor that grants the company immense and critically durable pricing power. It's really the core of their competitive edge.
So if they own the blueprints and the certifications, and they're often the only ones who can make a particular part, wow, you can just imagine the kind of leverage they have. And this ties directly into their unique private equity operating philosophy you mentioned earlier. They explicitly state their goal is to provide private equity-like returns with the liquidity of a public market. How do they actually structure themselves to achieve such an ambitious goal?
Well, to achieve that, they operate on a distinctively decentralized model. The parent company, TransDigm itself, oversees 51 independently managed operating units. 51. Each of these units is responsible for its own market strategy and operational execution. This structure is designed specifically to foster an entrepreneurial, agile, and highly accountable culture. It works by pushing decision-making authority down to the business level, much closer to the products and customers. It's definitely not your typical top-down corporate structure. It fosters a real sense of individual ownership within each business unit.
51 units. That's fascinating. And this isn't just theory, right? They have a very clear, proven operating strategy based on three core value drivers. What are those drivers?
Right, it's very explicit. First, they focus on generating profitable new business. This means leveraging their technical expertise and market knowledge to secure positions on new and existing aircraft platforms. They want to be designed in right from the start, if possible. Second, it's all about productivity and cost improvements. They have this relentless focus on maintaining a lean cost structure and continuously improving operational efficiency across all their units. They're not just buying companies, they're actively optimizing them, squeezing out costs from the ground up.
Okay, lean and mean. And third, which is perhaps the most famous, or maybe infamous, depending on your perspective, value-based pricing. How does that work in practice? What does it really mean?
It means they price their highly engineered, value-added products to reflect the critical function they perform and the immense value they provide to the customer, rather than simply pricing based on their cost to produce plus some standard markup. This is precisely where those sky-high margins come from. It's about charging what the market will bear for an indispensable, often sole source item that might be critical for keeping a plane flying.
Right. Charging for the value, not the cost.
Yeah.
Okay. All of this sounds like it feeds directly into what many people call their acquisition engine. How does this discipline and programmatic acquisition strategy fuel their overall growth? It seems central.
Oh, it's absolutely central. Their growth is overwhelmingly driven by this strategy. Since its inception, the company has acquired approximately 90 businesses. They've been systematically consolidating niche segments of the aerospace components industry. They're kind of like a vacuum cleaner, methodically acquiring these highly profitable, small, proprietary aerospace parts manufacturers.
They don't just buy anything that moves, do they? What are their specific criteria for these acquisitions? They must be picky.
Extremely picky. Absolutely not just anything. Their acquisition criteria are incredibly specific and, by all accounts, strictly adhered to. They're looking for proprietary commercial aerospace component businesses that have significant, stable aftermarket content. And they need to see a clear path to value creation using their model. They explicitly avoid non-proprietary build-to-print commodity work. Why? Because, as we mentioned, that offers lower margins and much weaker competitive positioning. If it's not unique and high-margin potential, they're simply not interested.
Got it. Proprietary aftermarket focus, clear path to value, and once they acquire a company, they have a very well-defined playbook, right? What does that integration process typically involve?
Yeah, they have it down to a science. It typically involves installing their decentralized management culture, optimizing the cost structure to improve efficiency, and then, critically, applying their value-based pricing methodology to the newly acquired product lines. This often results in a significant and rapid improvement in the target company's profitability and cash flow generation, which makes the acquisition immediately accretive to their financials. It boosts their numbers right away.
Okay, so this brings us to what you called their self-reinforcing flywheel. Can you break that down? How does that truly operate to compound value over time?
Yeah, it's a really brilliant closed-loop system when it works. Think of it like this. The high-margin cash flow is generated by their existing portfolio of aftermarket products. That's the fuel for this machine. This reliable cash generation then supports their highly leveraged balance sheet, which acts as the engine to finance the acquisition of new businesses. Then these acquired companies, in turn, add their own streams of proprietary, high-margin aftermarket revenue, adding more fuel to the flywheel and enabling the cycle to repeat and compound value over time.
It's like a perpetual motion machine for value creation, at least in theory. It really is fascinating how they've perfected that playbook. Buy a small, critical aerospace supplier, apply their secret sauce of cost-cutting and pricing, and boom, it fuels the next acquisition.
It's incredibly effective. But this also raises an important question, which you hinted at. How sustainable is that acquisition pipeline long-term? That's a critical consideration. But for now, it's absolutely clear their ability to generate consistent high-margin cash flow is the bedrock of their entire strategy. The entire model's stability and success are predicated on the uninterrupted flow of this high-margin aftermarket cash. That cash allows them to service their substantial debt and continue their strategic acquisitions. It's an incredibly symbiotic relationship between their operations and their financing.
Okay, let's zoom out a bit and consider the broader environment TransDigm operates in, the aerospace and defense industry, or A&D. This is just a massive, complex sector, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Massive is the word. In the U.S. alone, total sales topped $955 billion in 2023, and global market forecasts are consistently bullish. Projections show the market expanding from around $875 billion in 2025 to nearly $1.1 trillion by 2029. That's a compound annual growth rate, a CAGR of about 5.8%. Other reports even suggest an 8.5% CAGR between 2022 and 2026. So big numbers, strong growth.
And what are the fundamental drivers behind this growth? And maybe what macro trends are shaping the industry right now?
The industry is fundamentally driven by two primary engines, commercial aviation, airlines and passenger travel, and global defense spending. North America remains the dominant market, accounting for over 40% of global aviation fuels. That's huge. Then there's the accelerating adoption of digital technologies like AI and smart factories, and the nascent but potentially transformative emergence of advanced air mobility or AMN flying taxis, that sort of thing. Yeah. These are major forces shaping the entire landscape.
Right. Those are big shifts. Now, let's hone in on commercial aviation dynamics, specifically the post-COVID comeback. We've seen a pretty vigorous recovery in air travel, haven't we?
We certainly have. Global air passenger traffic, which they measure in revenue passenger kilometers, or RPKs, officially surpassed pre-pandemic levels back in February 2024. And as of early 2025, RPKs are up nearly 4%. From their 2019 peaks. Mm-hmm. So people are definitely flying again and actually flying more than before the pandemic.
And the long-term forecasts remain incredibly bullish. I saw Boeing's 2025-2044 commercial market outlook. That's kind of a key industry benchmark, right?
It is, yes.
It projects that global passenger traffic will grow at an annual rate of 4.2% over the next two decades. The sustained growth is expected to nearly double the size of the global fleet, requiring something like 43,600 new commercial airplanes by 2044. So the demand for air travel and thus airplanes is certainly not going anywhere. It's a long-term growth story.
Indeed. However, here's where we see a really critical mismatch right now. Despite this booming demand for air travel and new planes, there's a severe and persistent constraint in the supply of new aircraft. Major original equipment manufacturers, the OEMs, especially Boeing and, well, to some extent Airbus too, are facing significant production challenges. We're talking about ongoing supply chain disruptions, labor shortages, and unfortunately, some very well-publicized quality control issues, particularly impacting Boeing.
And what's the direct result of those production issues for the OEMs like Boeing and Airbus? Long waits.
Exactly. Both Boeing and Airbus have multi-year backlogs for their popular models. They are effectively sold out for years to come on certain planes. Our sources indicate that these supply chain challenges are widely expected to persist through 2025 and potentially even into 2026. This isn't a quick fix. It seems to be a deep-seated structural issue on the manufacturing side of the industry.
Okay, now here's where it gets interesting and maybe a bit counterintuitive. Our sources suggest the struggles of OEMs like Boeing might actually be boosting TransDigm's most profitable business. How does that dynamic play out between the OEM market and the aftermarket for TransDigm?
That's a sharp observation and is absolutely correct. The OEM market, which is directly tied to new aircraft production rates, is facing headwinds because fewer new planes are being built. TransDigm's own guidance for fiscal 2025 projects flat to low single-digit growth for its commercial OEM business. Less new planes means fewer new TransDigm parts going directly onto those new aircraft.
Okay, so OEM is slow, but then there's the aftermarket, the MRO maintenance, repair, and overhaul, which is experiencing what industry analysts are calling a super cycle. What's driving that?
Right, the aftermarket's health is driven by the size, the age, and the utilization, how much they fly, of the global in-service fleet. Because airlines can't get enough new planes due to those OEM constraints, they are effectively forced to extend the service lives of their existing older aircraft to meet passenger demand. And older aircraft, as you might guess, require more frequent and more intensive maintenance, repair, and component replacement than newer ones.
Okay. So the lack of new planes is actually creating a greater need for parts for the older planes that have to keep flying longer.
Precisely. This dynamic has created this super cycle for MRO, which is forecast to reach a record $119 billion in 2025. And we're seeing it in the data. The average age of the global commercial fleet has risen from 12.1 years in early 2024 to 13.4 years in early 2025. That directly fuels demand for TransDigm's high-margin aftermarket parts and services.
So it's this wild, counterintuitive situation where the struggles of giants like Boeing are actually boosting TransDigm's most profitable business. Less new planes means more life for old planes, which means more parts needed from TransDigm.
It really is. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it certainly underscores the incredible resilience of their model. Even a weakness in their lower margin OEM segment directly correlates to increased demand in their higher margin aftermarket. It's like a built-in hedge almost. And this was explicitly demonstrated recently in the third quarter of fiscal 2025. OEM weakness caused a top-line revenue miss for TransDigm, but the strength in their aftermarket and defense segments was so pronounced that they actually raised their full-year guidance for EBITDA and adjusted earnings per share.
Wow.
Yeah, it acted as a real-world stress test that validated their strategy. It confirmed that their overall profitability is driven by the more stable and, frankly, more lucrative aftermarket segment.
Okay, that's a powerful dynamic. Beyond commercial aviation, TransDigm's revenue is also heavily tied to defense, about 40%, you said. How are those dynamics playing out for them? Is that segment growing too?
Yes. The global defense market is also experiencing a period of renewed and sustained growth. This is largely driven by a complex and, unfortunately, deteriorating geopolitical landscape around the world. Global defense expenditures surpassed $2.4 trillion in 2023. Ongoing conflicts and rising tensions are prompting governments worldwide to significantly increase their military budgets.
And the U.S. remains a stable anchor for that market, doesn't it, given its size?
It does. The United States remains the world's largest defense spender by a significant margin, providing a degree of stability. Current defense spending priorities are clearly shifting towards the modernization of aging military platforms, investments in next-generation capabilities like space and missile defense, and, critically, the urgent need to replenish stockpiles of munitions and equipment depleted by current global events, like support for Ukraine. TransDigm is seen as well-positioned in this environment, with that 40% of its sales tied to the defense market. It provides a stable and growing demand backdrop for a big chunk of their business.
Okay, let's talk about TransDigm's fortified castle, its economic moats. This is really about understanding why they can achieve those incredible margins and sustain them. Our sources point to a powerful and durable wide economic moat. What are the pillars that make it so resilient? What makes them so hard to compete with?
Right, the moat is key. The absolute cornerstone of this moat is their proprietary products and intellectual property. As we've established, about 90% of their sales come from components for which they own the design and the IP. And for many of these parts, TransDigm isn't just a supplier, it is the sole source supplier. They are literally the only company certified to produce that specific component for a given aircraft platform. This exclusivity is just fundamental to their entire business model.
Sole source. Okay, that's powerful. Then you have high customer switching costs. How does that actually play out for an airline or an OEM who might think about switching?
Well, it's a massive barrier. Once a TransDigm part is designed into an aircraft platform and gets certified by the aviation authorities, the FAA in the US, EASA in Europe, it becomes deeply entrenched. Mm-hmm. We're talking for the entire 25 to 30 year life of that aircraft model. For an airline or an OEM to switch to a different supplier for a flight critical component Well, it would require a prohibitively expensive, time-consuming, and frankly risky recertification process. Mm. This creates what our sources call an exceptionally sticky customer base. Once TransDigm is in, they're generally in for the long haul. It's just too hard to switch.
Wow, 25, 30 years. That's incredibly sticky. And underpinning all of this are the stringent regulatory barriers in aerospace.
Absolutely. The aerospace industry is arguably one of the most highly regulated sectors globally, for obvious safety reasons. The process of designing, testing, manufacturing, and then certifying a new aircraft component can literally take years and cost millions upon millions of dollars. These stringent safety and quality standards act as a massive structural barrier that deters potential new entrants from even trying to challenge established and certified suppliers like TransDigm. The bar is just incredibly high.
Okay, so proprietary IP, high switching costs, huge regulatory hurdles. This powerful combination results in immense and sustainable pricing power, especially in that lucrative aftermarket segment. It sounds like once a TransDigm part is on a plane, it's incredibly sticky, almost locked in. Can you explain how this leads to such immense pricing power, especially in those urgent scenarios like an aircraft on ground?
Yeah, the aircraft on ground, or AOG, scenario is the perfect illustration of this power. Imagine an airline has a multi-million dollar jet stuck on the tarmac. It can't fly. It's losing money every minute. It needs a specific, certified replacement part immediately to get back in the air and start making money again. In that situation, the cost of that replacement part, even at a very, very high margin for TransDigm, is almost negligible compared to the lost revenue and operational disruption of keeping that expensive plane grounded.
Right. The cost of the part is tiny compared to the cost of the plane sitting idle.
Exactly. The airline will pay almost anything reasonable, maybe even unreasonable, to get that multi-million dollar asset flying again as quickly as possible. That's true value-based pricing in action. It's pricing based on the value of solving that huge problem for the airline.
This is the magic, isn't it? Once TransDigm gets a part on a plane, it's virtually there for the life of that plane, and they can price it to reflect its critical value, especially when needed urgently. That AOG scenario really brings it home. You'll pay almost anything to get your multi-million dollar asset flying again. Now let's look at their market position and how they stack up against peers. TransDigm operates by dominating a multitude of these highly specialized niche component markets. Their strategy isn't to compete broadly, but rather to be the leading and often sole provider for the specific products it sells. How does that compare to others in the aerospace parts space?
Okay, yeah, comparing them is useful. When we talk about direct aftermarket competitors, the name that comes up most often, the most direct comparison in terms of business model, is HEICO Corporation. Like TransDigm, HEICO focuses heavily on the high-margin aerospace aftermarket and also uses an acquisition-led growth strategy, so superficially similar. However, there's a crucial distinction in how they compete in the aftermarket. A significant part of HEICO's business involves producing what are called Parts Manufacturer Approval, or PMA parts. These are essentially FAA-approved, reverse-engineered generic equivalents of OEM parts. Think of it like generic drugs for airplanes. In contrast, TransDigm's strategy is usually to acquire the original OEM of the part itself, thereby owning the original intellectual property and the original certification.
Ah, okay. So TransDigm is the original manufacturer in many cases, rather than creating a generic equivalent like HEICO sometimes does.
Precisely. While both models have proven highly successful, TransDigm's approach is generally considered to possess a stronger, more durable moat because it is the OEM. It doesn't have to compete directly with the original manufacturer on price or quality perception for those parts. It's the original manufacturer. Plus, the competitive threat from the PMA model is structurally limited for a large portion of TransDigm's portfolio anyway. The high fixed costs involved in reverse engineering and certifying a PMA part mean it's really only economically viable for higher price components, typically those retailing for over, say, $5,000. And here's the kicker. Approximately 90% of TransDigm's parts actually cost less than this threshold, which means the vast majority of its catalog is naturally insulated from that specific form of PMA competition. That's a powerful structural defense.
Wow, 90% under that threshold. That's a huge buffer. Okay, then you have other component and system suppliers like Moog Inc. and Parker Hannifin Corporation. How do they differ from TransDigm's specific model?
Right, these are major respected companies, and they certainly compete with TransDigm in various product categories. For instance, Moog is a leader in high-performance motion control systems. Parker Hannifin is huge in motion and control technologies. However, these companies generally operate with a more traditional, engineering-led, often more OEM-focused business model. They tend to be broader, may be less focused on just the aftermarket. And critically, they lack TransDigm's singular, almost obsessive focus on financial optimization, aftermarket dominance, and that aggressive private equity-style operational playbook we keep talking about. This strategic difference is starkly reflected in their financial profiles. TransDigm consistently reports substantially higher profit margins than companies like Moog or Parker Hannifin.
Okay, different focus, different results. And finally, the large diversified primes, we're talking about the giants like RTX Corporation, formerly Raytheon Technologies, and Honeywell, how do they fit in?
Well, they're not really direct competitors across TransDigm's entire niche portfolio. Although they do overlap on certain components and systems, they produce a huge range of aircraft components and systems, absolutely. But for them, these components are typically just a small part of a much larger, much more diversified business that includes things like engines, avionics, defense systems, etc. These huge firms simply don't share TransDigm's unique focus and operational intensity, specifically in the niche component aftermarket. It's just not their core game in the same way. So this comparative analysis really shows that while many companies operate in the broad aerospace parts space, TransDigm's model creates a distinct and powerful competitive advantage. It's not just about what they sell, but how they acquire it, how they manage it, how they price it, and the structural barriers they benefit from. It's truly a masterclass in market segmentation and strategic positioning.
Okay, let's turn to the numbers, because this is where TransDigm truly, truly stands out. Their financial track record is, well, nothing short of remarkable. Well, what kind of growth and profitability are we actually talking about here?
Yeah, the historical performance really demonstrates an incredible ability to compound revenue and earnings over time. Annual revenue has expanded significantly, growing from about $2.71 billion back in fiscal year 2015 to $7.94 billion in fiscal year 2024. That represents a compound annual growth rate, or CGR, of approximately 12.7% over nearly a decade. Pretty strong top-line growth.
12.7% CAGR over that period? Solid. And when you break down that growth, is it mostly organic growth from existing businesses, or is M&A a really big part of that top-line number?
It's definitely a mix, but M&A plays a huge role. While total revenue growth has been consistently strong, for example, it was up 20.6% in FY 2024 and 21.3% in FY 2023, a significant portion of that growth has been heavily supplemented by M&A activity. Organic growth, which reflects the underlying performance of their core existing businesses, has been more modest but still quite healthy. It registered 6.3% in the third quarter of fiscal 2025, for example. Over the prior two fiscal years, organic revenue growth averaged a very respectable 13%, while total revenue growth averaged 17.2%. That difference clearly illustrates the significant contribution from those acquisitions they bolt on.
Okay, so acquisitions are definitely juicing the growth rate, but the most striking feature of TransDigm's financial profile, the one that truly sets them apart, is their extraordinary profitability. How do their margins compare to other industrial or A&D peers? It's night and day, right?
It really is night and day. Their gross profit margins are consistently maintained up near 60%. 60%. Even more impressively, the company's adjusted EBITDA margin, that's a key metric of operating cash flow profitability, is consistently in the low to mid 50% range. In the third quarter of fiscal 2025, this metric actually reached a record high of 54.4%. These margins are just substantially higher than those of almost any other industrial or A&D peer you can name, and they're a direct result of the company's unwavering focus on proprietary aftermarket parts and its disciplined operational strategy, including that value-based pricing.
Look at these numbers. That 50% plus EBITDA margin is just insane for an industrial company. Most companies would dream of maybe half that. It really shows how powerful their moat and their business model truly are.
It's exceptional, no doubt.
And that level of profitability must translate into strong returns on capital, even with all the goodwill sitting on their balance sheet from acquisitions.
Absolutely. Despite a balance sheet that's heavily weighted with goodwill from literally decades of acquisitions, TransDigm generates strong returns on the capital it employs. One analysis we looked at estimated their return on invested capital, or ROIC, including all that goodwill, would average around 13.8% from fiscal 2017 to 2021. And if you were to exclude the impact of recent, less mature acquisitions, that ROIC figure would likely rise to approximately 18%. That indicates really robust performance from their core mature businesses.
Okay, 18% ROIC ex recent deals. Yeah. Very strong. And for our listeners, it's important to clarify that traditional metrics like return on equity or ROE aren't particularly meaningful for TransDigm. Why is that the case?
That's right. Good point. Because of their strategy of funding large shareholder returns, especially those big special dividends, with debt, the company actually has a significant stockholders' deficit on its balance sheet, Basically, liabilities exceed assets on paper. This accounting situation renders ROE calculations negative and ultimately pretty misleading. ROE just doesn't work here. ROIC, on the other hand, is the much more appropriate measure for evaluating their capital efficiency because it accounts for all the capital invested in the business, both debt and equity, not just the distorted equity figure.
Got it. Focus on ROIC, not ROE.
Yeah.
And all this profitability and efficiency means one thing. They must be a prolific generator of cash.
Oh, indeed. A cash machine. In the third quarter of fiscal 2025 alone, Transdev generated a staggering $715 million in free cash flow, just in one quarter. For the full fiscal year 2024, net cash provided by operating activities exceeded $2.0 billion. This powerful cash generation is the absolute lifeblood of their entire strategy. It provides the necessary funds to service their considerable debt load, pursue more acquisitions, and when appropriate, return capital to shareholders via those special dividends or buybacks.
Let's quickly walk through their 10-year financial summary from fiscal year 2015 through 2024, just to really illustrate these powerful trends for you. What jumped out from the consistent growth in net sales over that decade?
Well, you see net sales consistently growing from that $2.7 billion in 2015 to nearly $8 billion by 2024. That's almost a tripling. Their year-over-year sales growth has been a bit volatile, as you'd expect with acquisitions, but often very strong. You see spikes in 2019 up 37%, 2023 up 21.3%, and 2024 up 20.6%. Big jumps. And what's truly remarkable is the consistency in their EBITDA, as defined that key profitability metric. It grew steadily alongside revenue.
And especially the EBITDA as defined margin.
Right.
It's been consistently over 44% throughout this entire decade, peaking at 52.6% in 2024. The stability at such a high level is just incredible.
It really is.
The numbers here are truly striking. That 50% plus EBITDA margin, as our sources highlight, is just in a league of its own for an industrial company. It certainly speaks volumes about the power of their moat and their unique business model, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And while net income and adjusted EPS saw some dips, particularly during the pandemic disruption in 2020 and 2021, the overall trend is clearly one of strong growth and remarkable resilience. It demonstrates the fundamental cash generation capacity through thick and thin. It's an exceptional business purely from a profitability standpoint.
Okay, let's pivot now to talk specifically about capital allocation. This isn't just some side activity at TransDigm. Our sources make it clear that it is a central pillar of the company's value creation strategy. And it's managed with the kind of discipline and focus you'd typically expect from a top-tier private equity firm. What is their hierarchy, their priority list, for deploying all that cash flow they generate?
Right. They are very clear and very consistent about this. The first priority is always to reinvest sufficiently in their existing businesses to maintain their operations and competitive positions. Standard stuff. But after that, the primary use of capital, the main event really, is to fund accretive, disciplined mergers and acquisitions. This M&A engine is stated as the principal driver of TransDigm's long-term growth strategy. They're incredibly good at it. They have a long and demonstrably successful history of acquiring and integrating businesses effectively.
Can you give us a sense of some of their more notable large-scale transactions over the years, just to illustrate the scale we're talking about?
Certainly. Some of their more significant deals include the acquisition of Esterline Technologies for a hefty $4.7 billion back in 2018. That deal was executed at an implied enterprise value to last 12 months EBITDA multiple of about 14.0x. That was a significant premium compared to the median multiple for similar aerospace deals at the time. Going back further, the acquisition of McKechnie Aerospace for $1.27 billion in 2010 was a big win. And the purchase of AmSafe Global Holdings for $750 million in 2012, which was done at a multiple of approximately 12.4x EBITDA. So big deals, often at premium prices.
Paying such premiums like 14x EBITDA for Esterline, that reflects management's deep confidence, doesn't it? Confidence in the quality of the companies they're buying and crucially in their own ability to extract synergies and implement their high margin operating model after the deal closes.
Absolutely. It shows huge confidence in their own playbook.
However, that also sounds like it leaves very little room for error, right? If you pay that much, you really need the integration to go perfectly.
It does. You're absolutely right. Paying those kinds of multiples leaves very little margin for integration errors or any underperformance relative to their plan. It's definitely a high-stakes game they play. And their M&A engine remains highly active even now. During fiscal 2025, TransDigm completed the acquisition of Servotronics, a supplier of specialty electromechanical components, for about $138 million. They also announced a definitive agreement to acquire Simmons Precision Products from RTX Corporation for approximately $765 million in cash. These transactions brought the total capital deployed or committed to acquisitions just in fiscal 2025 to over $900 million. So it clearly demonstrates their continued ability and willingness to execute this core growth strategy. The engine is still running.
Okay, M&A is priority number one after internal needs. This disciplined approach extends to their leverage and debt management as well. TransDigm deliberately employs a highly leveraged capital structure. It's a core tenet of its private equity-like model, specifically designed to amplify returns on equity. As of the third quarter of fiscal 2025, the company had total debt of approximately $25.2 billion, with a B, with a net debt to EBITDA ratio of 5.1x. That's significant leverage. How do they manage the substantial debt load?
Yeah, 5.1x is definitely up there. To manage this substantial debt, management actively monitors the credit markets. They frequently refinance their debt to extend maturities, manage interest costs, and maintain as much financial flexibility as possible given the leverage. And critically, to mitigate the risk of rising interest rates on its substantial variable rate debt, the company has implemented a pretty significant hedging program. They utilize things like interest rate caps, swaps, and collars to effectively fix the interest rate on approximately 75% of its gross debt through fiscal 2027. This is a very important risk management detail that protects them against immediate interest rate shocks on a large portion of their debt.
Okay, hedging 75% through FY27 provides some protection. Lastly, let's talk about their shareholder returns, which are also quite unique compared to most public companies. What is their approach to returning capital to shareholders? When does that happen?
Right. This is the third priority in TransDigm's capital allocation framework. It's pursued only when suitable M&A opportunities that meet their strict return criteria are not readily available or seem overpriced. And notably, they don't pay a regular, predictable quarterly cash dividend like many large companies do. This policy, they say, provides maximum financial flexibility to accumulate cash for those large, sometimes unpredictable, or what they call lumpy acquisitions. They want to keep their powder dry for deals.
Right. No regular dividend. Instead, they have this long history of paying large, infrequent special cash dividends when excess capital builds up on the balance sheet, right? Can you give a recent example of that?
Exactly. This approach was on full display in fiscal 2024. The company paid a $35 per share special dividend and then subsequently announced an even larger $75 per share special dividend, which was actually paid out in early fiscal 2025. These two massive distributions alone returned a total of approximately $6.2 billion in cash to shareholders. Just boom, big payout. In addition to these massive special dividends, the company also opportunistically repurchases its own shares sometimes. For instance, during the first 9 months of fiscal 2025, TransDigm allocated about $500 million to share buybacks.
Wow, $6.2 billion in special dividends. That's significant.
It is. This flexible and opportunistic approach to shareholder returns is a strategic choice that really reinforces their private equity-like model. It prevents cash drag, having too much unproductive cash sitting around, and ensures capital is deployed in what management deems the most value-accretive manner available at any given time, whether that's a deal, debt paydown, or a return to shareholders. As you said, this capital allocation strategy is textbook private equity. They use debt as a tool, not just a liability, specifically to amplify returns. And they only return capital when it's strategically optimal from their perspective. Rather than through a fixed commitment like a regular dividend, it's all about maximizing long-term shareholder value their way.
Okay, let's shift our focus now to the most recent period, say 2023 through 2025. It sounds like it's been quite a dynamic time for TransDigm, characterized by strong post-pandemic tailwinds in some markets, but also those persistent headwinds in others we talked about, and even a significant strategic evolution in their leadership. Can you walk us through the post-COVID aviation recovery impact on their business recently?
Yeah, it's been a mix, but generally positive overall. The robust and sustained recovery in global air travel has, as we discussed, been a major tailwind for TransDigm's most profitable segment, the commercial aftermarket. The continued growth in flight hours and that critical need to service an aging global fleet have driven really strong demand for their commercial aftermarket parts. Just looking at the numbers, in the third quarter of fiscal 2025, their commercial aftermarket revenue grew by a healthy 6% year over year. And management's guidance for the full fiscal year 2025 anticipates continued strength here. They're projecting growth in this key segment to be in the high single-digit to low double-digit percentage range. So aftermarket is humming along nicely.
Okay, aftermarket's strong. But in stark contrast to that aftermarket strength, there's been persistent weakness recently in their commercial OEM segment, right? The part that sells to new planes. What's driving that continued weakness?
That's right. This has primarily been driven by those well-documented lower production rates at the major airframers, particularly Boeing, as well as some inventory destocking by certain customers further down the supply chain. As a result, TransDigm's commercial OEM revenue was actually down year over year in the third quarter of fiscal 2025. And this weakness was the primary reason they slightly reduced their full-year sales guidance recently. So the outlook for the commercial OEM segment in fiscal 2025 remains pretty muted. Growth is expected to be flat to maybe low single digits. Not much happening there.
And this recent divergent strong aftermarket, weak OEM, actually served to validate the core investment thesis for TransDigm, didn't it? It showed where the real profit driver is.
It absolutely did. It was a fascinating real-world test. Despite the OEM weakness causing that slight top-line revenue miss in Q3 2025, the strength in the higher-margin aftermarket and also their defense businesses was so pronounced that the company simultaneously raised its full-year guidance for EBITDA and adjusted earnings per share. Profitability guidance went up, even as sales guidance came down slightly.
Wow, that's telling.
It really is.
Yeah.
This event acted as a real-world stress test, demonstrating the resilience of their business model and confirming, yet again, that their overall profitability is primarily driven by the more stable and much more lucrative aftermarket segment, not the OEM side.
Okay. And in terms of broader economic challenges, like ongoing supply chain disruptions and those broad inflationary pressures we've all been seeing, how has TransDigm navigated those recently?
They seem to have managed them quite effectively, actually, thanks to their powerful competitive position and that significant pricing power we keep mentioning. They appear to have managed these cost pressures more effectively than most industrial companies. And the evidence for that is their continued ability to actually expand their industry-leading profit margins, even in this challenging inflationary environment. They're passing costs through and then some.
Impressive margin control. And from a strategic initiatives perspective, what have they been up to recently besides weathering these dynamics? Still executing the playbook.
Very much so. TransDigm has remained highly active on the strategic front. They continue to execute their acquisition strategy, as we noted, with the purchase of Servotronics and the announced acquisition of Simmons Precision in 2025. So the M&A engine is still firing. They also proactively managed their balance sheet, refinancing $2.65 billion of debt recently to extend its maturity profile and lock in rates where possible. These are the consistent actions of a management team sticking firmly to its established playbook.
Right. Now, perhaps the most significant development in this recent period, and certainly the one with the most long-term implications, has been the announcement back in May 2025 of a major leadership transition. Longtime CEO Kevin Stein is set to retire, with current co-chief operating officer Mike Lisman named as his successor. Our sources flagged this upcoming change at the top as potentially the most significant non-financial risk to the long-term investment case. This CEO transition sounds like a huge deal. It's not just replacing a person, is it? It's about maintaining that very specific, almost aggressive private equity culture that has made TransDigm so successful over decades. How do you see the new leadership preserving that edge? Can they keep it going?
That's the multi-billion dollar question, isn't it? Well, the appointment of a longtime insider like Mike Lisman, someone steeped in the TransDigm way, certainly suggests a strong desire within the company and the board to maintain strategic and cultural continuity. Any significant deviation from that core playbook by the new leadership, however subtle, could potentially erode the company's hard-won competitive advantages over time. So for you, the listener, the first major capital allocation decisions of the new CEO, how they handle the next big acquisition opportunity, or maybe the next chance for a special dividend, those will be absolutely critical to monitor. They will provide the clear signals early on about whether that very specific strategic playbook remains fully intact under the new leadership. It's a key thing to watch.
Okay, looking ahead now, TransDigm's future growth prospects seem to be underpinned by a combination of powerful long-term secular trends in its end markets and, of course, the continued execution of its unique value creation strategy. What's the primary long-term driver that investors are banking on?
Well, the primary long-term driver for TransDigm, really for the whole commercial aerospace sector, is the structural growth of global commercial aviation itself. This is fundamentally fueled by things like an expanding global middle class, particularly in emerging markets, and just consistent consumer preference for travel experiences over things. People want to fly. As we mentioned, Boeing's authoritative commercial market outlook projects that 4.2% annual growth rate in passenger traffic all the way out through 2044. This long-term secular trend provides a durable tailwind for both the OEM market, as airlines inevitably need to expand their fleets over time, and perhaps more importantly for TransDigm, the aftermarket. A larger global fleet naturally requires more maintenance and more parts over its lifetime.
Right. That long-term travel demand seems pretty solid. And in the medium term, we've discussed that the current dynamic of an aging global fleet is a powerful growth driver, specifically for the aftermarket. How does that translate into continued demand for TransDigm over the next few years?
Yeah, that's a really important medium-term factor right now. As we've discussed, those production constraints at the major OEMs are effectively forcing airlines to delay the retirement of their older aircraft just to meet current passenger demand. They need the seats. And critically, older planes simply require more frequent maintenance checks and consume spare parts at a significantly higher rate than brand new aircraft. That's just the physics of aging machines. This dynamic is widely expected to provide a multi-year tailwind for MRO spending and aftermarket parts demand. And that should support both volume growth and, crucially for TransDigm, continued pricing power in their most profitable segment.
Okay, so aging fleet is a medium-term boost. And on the defense side, what are the prospects there? Continued strength expected?
Yes. On the defense side, the global geopolitical environment has clearly shifted towards an era of, well, great power competition and heightened regional instability. Unfortunately, that's the reality. This has led to a broad-based increase in defense budgets, not just in the United States, but also among key allies in Europe and Asia. Everyone's spending more. This trend is highly likely to support robust and sustained demand for military hardware for the foreseeable future. There's a particular focus on modernizing existing platforms, planes, ships, vehicles, and procuring next-generation systems. With approximately 40% of its sales tied to the defense market, TransDigm is exceptionally well positioned to capitalize on this increased spending through its content on a wide variety of military aircraft and other defense systems. That provides a solid foundation.
Good positioning there. And finally, a key growth runway that keeps coming up is their continued M&A runway. Is there still room for them to keep buying companies?
It seems so, yes. The aerospace components market remains highly fragmented. Surprisingly so, perhaps. There are literally hundreds of small to medium-sized private companies out there that potentially fit TransDigm's very specific acquisition criteria, proprietary tech, good aftermarket exposure. This provides what looks like a long runway for the company to continue executing its core strategy of growth through these bolt-on acquisitions. And they've clearly demonstrated their continued focus here. They maintain an active M&A pipeline and, as we noted, deployed over $900 million in capital just for acquisitions in fiscal 2025 alone. They are still actively hunting. So yeah, this paints a very compelling picture for long-term growth, doesn't it? The secular trends in both commercial and defense aviation provide a robust demand backdrop, and their unique acquisition model gives them a clear path to continue expanding and consolidating within that landscape. As long as, and this is the key caveat, as long as management can continue to identify suitable targets and acquire them at valuations that still allow for its targeted private equity-like returns, that gets harder as you get bigger.
Okay, now, as with any investment, especially one that performs as exceptionally as TransDigm has, it's absolutely crucial to understand the other side of the coin, the key risks involved. Despite its strong market position and impressive financial performance, an investment in TransDigm is definitely subject to a number of significant risks. These seem primarily related to its aggressive financial leverage, the cyclical nature of its end markets, and potential regulatory pressures. Let's start with what seems like the most significant one, their financial risks and the debt burden.
Yes, that leverage is definitely the elephant in the room. With net debt sitting around $22.4 billion and a net debt to EBITDA ratio recently at 5.1x, the company's capital structure clearly carries substantial financial risk. There's no way around that. This high level of indebtedness means that a large portion of the company's robust cash flow has to be dedicated simply to servicing interest payments. And that can, of course, limit financial flexibility for other endeavors, like maybe even more M&A or bigger shareholder returns.
And crucially, in a really severe or prolonged downturn in the aerospace market, like another pandemic or a deep global recession, that high debt load could severely impair the company's ability to meet its debt obligations, couldn't it? That's the nightmare scenario.
That is the nightmare scenario, exactly. Significant cyclical risk is amplified by leverage. Furthermore, in a higher for longer interest rate environment, which many economists are now forecasting, the cost of servicing this debt, especially any floating rate portion, and the cost of refinancing future maturities could increase significantly. That eats into cash flow. And that's despite the fact, as we mentioned, that the company has mitigated a portion of this risk by hedging about 75% of its gross debt through fiscal 2027. That still leaves 25% exposed, and eventually those hedges run off. We also can't forget the risk of restrictive covenants in their various debt agreements. If their financial performance were to deteriorate significantly, a breach of these covenants could potentially trigger an acceleration of their debt obligations, forcing repayment sooner than planned. That would be very problematic.
Okay, leverage is risk number one. Next, we have cyclical and market risks, which you touched on.
Right. TransDigm's business is inextricably linked to the health of the global airline industry and the broader A&D sector. These industries are just inherently cyclical. They're highly sensitive to a wide range of external factors. Macroeconomic conditions, recessions are bad for travel, geopolitical shocks, wars, instability, global pandemics, as we saw vividly, fuel price volatility, even acts of terrorism can ground planes. A sharp decline in global air travel for whatever reason would lead to reduced flight hours, potentially airlines parking aircraft, maybe even airline bankruptcies. All of that would severely depress demand for TransDigm's high-margin aftermarket parts. Similarly, on the defense side, while spending is strong now, a significant future reduction in U.S. or allied defense spending could negatively impact that large portion of its business as well.
It really feels like a tightrope walk sometimes, doesn't it? Their incredible margins are exactly what makes them so attractive as a business, but they've also drawn the unwanted eye of regulators in the past, particularly the government. How does TransDigm balance that aggressive pricing with the risk of drawing too much scrutiny and potential regulatory pressure?
That's the regulatory and pricing power risk, and it's a constant tension. You're right, the company's exceptional profit margins have, in the past, attracted scrutiny, particularly from its largest single customer, the U.S. government. There was a well-publicized 2019 audit by the Department of Defense's Inspector General. It actually concluded that TransDigm had earned excess profits on certain spare parts sold to the military, citing specific instances of what they called extremely high markups, unquote. Now, while that particular audit did not ultimately result in any direct punitive action or forced refunds against TransDigm, it certainly highlights a persistent risk. The spotlight is there. There's always the possibility that government customers or industry regulators could, in the future, decide to impose pricing caps or other restrictions on certain parts or contracts. These would directly challenge the company's fundamental value-based pricing model and could significantly compress its industry-leading margins. Any significant erosion of its pricing power, frankly, would strike at the very heart of the business model and the entire investment thesis. It's a key vulnerability.
Okay, regulatory scrutiny is a big one to watch. Then there's acquisition and integration risk. Their whole model relies on M&A working.
Exactly. As we've extensively discussed, TransDigm's growth model is heavily dependent on its ability to successfully identify, acquire, and integrate new businesses time after time. This strategy carries inherent risks. The company might overpay for an acquisition, especially in a competitive market, or they might fail to achieve the expected synergies and margin improvements they modeled, or they could simply struggle with the operational integration of a new business. Different cultures, different systems. And these risks are amplified, as we discussed earlier, by the high valuation multiples that TransDigm often pays for what it considers to be premier high-quality assets. A significant misstep in its M&A strategy, buying the wrong company, paying way too much, or fumbling the integration, could be highly destructive to shareholder value, especially given the leverage.
Right. One bad deal could hurt a lot. Finally, what about operational and product liability risks? The basic risks of making critical parts.
Yeah, you can't forget those. As a manufacturer of flight-critical components, parts that simply cannot fail, TransDigm is exposed to significant product liability risks. A failure of one of its products that leads to an aircraft incident, heaven forbid, could result in substantial legal liabilities, massive lawsuits, and severe reputational damage that could impact future business. The company is also subject to the more mundane but still important operational risks common to manufacturing businesses. Things like supply chain disruptions, labor shortages, cybersecurity threats, all of which could impact their ability to produce and deliver parts on time and maintain those margins. So yeah, these risks are definitely not trivial. While TransDigm has proven remarkably adept at managing them successfully so far, they remain critical variables that any investor must constantly monitor. The high leverage, in particular, means that while the upsides are amplified on the way up, so are the potential downsides if conditions turn unfavorable. It's a finely tuned machine, absolutely, but one that operates with a high degree of financial and operational tension at all times.
Okay, let's talk about valuation, because this is where TransDigm truly stands out, maybe even looks perplexing at first glance. The company consistently trades at a substantial premium to both its direct peers in aerospace and the broader market. What makes the market assign such a high valuation, such high multiples, to this company year after year?
Yeah, an analysis of key valuation metrics clearly reveals this significant premium. It's not subtle. As of early August 2025, TransDigm's stock was trading at a trailing 12-month, or TTM, gap price to earnings, PE ratio, of around 53.5x, and its TTM price to sales PS ratio was about 11.0x. These multiples are just starkly higher than those of the major defense primes we mentioned earlier. For example, Northrop Grumman might trade at a PE of 21.6x and a PS of 2.1x. Lockheed Martin might be a 23.7x PE and 1.4x PS. Much, much lower multiples.
Right. Huge difference versus the primes. And even when compared to other high-quality component suppliers, the premium for TransDigm is still pretty evident, isn't it?
It is, yes. Hamada Aerospace, for instance, another high-quality supplier, trades at a somewhat similar PE ratio, but its PS ratio is lower at 9.7x. And the most direct competitor, PayDR, actually trades at an even higher PE ratio, around 79x recently, which reflects its own strong growth and profitability profile. But NEI Co. has a comparable PS ratio to TransDigm, around 11.5x. On a cash flow basis, looking at EV/EBITDA, TransDigm's TTM multiple was approximately 26.2x. That's also significantly richer than the roughly 15.5x for Northrop Grumman, or maybe 15.2x for General Dynamics. So, premium across the board.
Okay, to illustrate this further, let's compare TransDigm's valuation and profitability metrics directly against a selection of its A&D peers using data from our sources. What do those side-by-side numbers tell us specifically about TransDigm's profitability versus the others?
Okay, let's look at that TTM EBITDA margin again. TransDigm Group, as we saw, is at 53.0%. 53%. Now compare that to AGI Co. at 25.4%, Howmet Aerospace at 27.4%, Moog Inc. way down at 9.4%, Parker Hannifin at 21.3%, RTX at 15.3%, Northrop Grumman at 15.9%, and Lockheed Martin at 14.2%.
Wow. That 53.0% for TransDigm is just absolutely unmatched profitability. It's in a different league entirely, making their EBITDA margins fundamentally superior to virtually all of their peers, often by 2x or even more. So, while Eato might have a higher PE multiple, TransDigm's underlying operational profitability, that EBITDA margin, is vastly superior. Similarly, Howmet might have a similar PE, but its PS ratio and its EBITDA margin are considerably lower than TransDigm's.
Exactly. So the big question is, why does the market consistently assign such a high valuation? What's the justification for this persistent premium? Well, it seems to be rooted in a clear set of superior financial and strategic attributes that genuinely differentiate TransDigm from the pack. First, as we just hammered home, exceptional and unmatched profitability. TransDigm's 50% plus EBITDA margin is simply in a different league. Most A&D peers are operating way down in the 15-25% range, maybe lower. This elite profitability is a direct result of their unique business model.
Okay, profitability is number one. Second, the market seems to really value their high-quality recurring revenue, right?
Sure. Precisely. Investors typically place a higher value on the stable, high-margin recurring revenue that comes from TransDigm's large aftermarket business. It's significantly less cyclical and more predictable than the OEM-heavy revenue streams of many of its peers. That stability commands a premium. Third, it's about their proven value creation model. The company has a multi-decade track record now of successfully executing its strategy, acquiring businesses, improving their operations significantly, and consistently compounding shareholder value over the long term. This long history of disciplined capital allocation and execution earns it a well-deserved premium in the market. Investors trust the playbook.
Makes sense. Track record matters. And fourth, it comes back to their wide and durable economic moat.
Exactly. Investors clearly recognize the incredible strength of TransDigm's competitive advantages. Those advantages built on that foundation of proprietary intellectual property, those incredibly high customer switching costs, and those stringent regulatory barriers that protect their long-term cash flows. The market believes that moat is real and sustainable.
Now, it is absolutely crucial for you, the listener, to recognize that TransDigm Corp's aggressive acquisition strategy has a significant impact on its balance sheet and therefore on the applicability of certain traditional valuation metrics. Can you explain that accounting consequence again? Why book value is weird here?
Yeah, it's important to understand this. The company's balance sheet carries a substantial amount of goodwill, around $10.4 billion recently, and other intangible assets, about $3.4 billion, as of the end of fiscal 2024. This is a direct accounting consequence of consistently paying purchase prices for acquired companies that are well in excess of the fair value of their tangible assets, like factories and equipment. They're buying future cash flows and IP, not just physical stuff. And what that means from an accounting perspective is this large amount of goodwill actually suppresses traditional metrics like book value. It leads to that situation we mentioned earlier, a stockholder's deficit on their balance sheet, where liabilities technically exceed assets according to GAAP rules. This makes ratios like price to book, PB, completely meaningless for TransDigm. And return on equity, ROE, is also distorted and negative, as we discussed. You just can't use them reliably here.
Okay, so PB and ROE are out. Consequently, any sensible analysis of TransDigm's valuation and performance must prioritize cash flow-based metrics, things like enterprise value to EBITDA, EBITDA and price to free cash flow, PFCF, and also return metrics that account for all the invested capital, like return on invested capital, ROIC. You look at those simple PE or PB multiples, and on paper, TransDigm seems incredibly, maybe absurdly expensive. But when you truly unpack why they trade there, the unique profitability, the incredible recurring cash flow, the moat, the track record, it starts to make more sense why investors are willing to pay that premium. It's not about what they own on paper in terms of book value, but how much cash they consistently spin off. That's what investors are ultimately paying for.
Right. And the long-term success of TransDigm's unique high-wire business model is heavily dependent on the quality, the discipline, and the strategic vision of its leadership team.
Yeah.
This isn't a company that just runs itself on autopilot. It requires very active, very specific management focus.
Definitely sounds like it. What can we say about the consistency of their strategic direction over the years and the track record of their senior management team? Has it been steady?
Remarkably so, actually. Their strategic direction has been incredibly consistent since the company's founding, largely due to the continued deep involvement of co-founder W. Nicholas Howley, who still serves as executive chairman of the board. That provides a crucial element of continuity and constantly reinforces the company's core value creation philosophy, that PE-like mindset. The senior management team, including the outgoing CEO, Kevin Stein, and the incoming CEO, Mike Lisman, has a long and demonstrably successful track record of executing the company's complex strategy. They've delivered consistent growth and exceptional profitability through various economic cycles and industry challenges. The execution has been top-notch historically.
Okay, strong track record. The recently announced succession of CEO Kevin Stein by co-chief operating officer Mike Lisman is obviously a pivotal event, as we've noted. What makes this particular leadership transition so critical for the company's future, more so than maybe at other companies?
Well, the selection of a longtime company insider like Mike Lisman, someone who grew up within the TransDigm system, suggests, as we said, a strong desire from the board and Howley to maintain strategic and cultural continuity. They likely picked the person they felt would best carry the torch. However, the new CEO's ability to maintain the exact same level of capital allocation discipline, operational intensity, and frankly, that aggressive edge that characterized his predecessors, that will be the critical variable for you, the investor, to monitor very closely in the coming years. That unique, aggressive culture is absolutely key to their past success, and preserving it is paramount.
Yeah, maintaining that specific secret sauce is crucial. Now, in terms of corporate governance and shareholder alignment, our sources suggest TransDigm structures are explicitly designed to align the interests of management with those of long-term shareholders. How do they achieve that alignment, particularly through executive compensation? That seems key.
It is key. Executive compensation, for example, is heavily weighted towards long-term equity incentives. These are typically granted in the form of performance-based stock options, not just time-vested ones. Unlike simple time-vested options that you get just for sticking around, these awards only become valuable, they only pay out, if management achieves rigorous, predefined performance hurdles over several years. The vesting of these options is specifically tied to the growth of a proprietary internal metric they call annual operating performance, or AOP. This AOP metric cleverly incorporates things like EBITDA growth, cash generation, and importantly, efficient management of the company's capital structure, including debt. So this incentive structure directly rewards the specific behaviors, profitable growth, strong cash generation, and disciplined capital deployment that truly drive their business model and long-term value creation. It's very tailored to their strategy.
Okay, so pay is tied directly to the core value drivers. And what about board oversight? Is it independent?
Yes. The board of directors maintains oversight through standard standing committees, audit, compensation, and nominating and corporate governance committees. And these are all composed of independent directors, according to governance standards. It is also worth noting for transparency that the company has faced challenges from shareholders in the past regarding its executive compensation practices, particularly some adjustments made during the pandemic disruption. However, the board did demonstrate a willingness to engage with investors on those issues and subsequently made responsive changes to its compensation program based on that feedback. Things like reverting to more traditional performance targets and eliminating certain dividend equivalent payments for directors. So they have shown some responsiveness to shareholder concerns when pushed. But overall, this alignment between management incentives and the core business drivers is a key strength. It's actually relatively rare to see such a direct link between executive pay and the metrics like AOP that truly focus on the unique drivers of their specific value creation model. The challenge, again, for the new CEO will be maintaining that intense discipline and focus under new leadership, ensuring the culture doesn't subtly waver over time.
Okay, as we wrap up this deep dive, we want to leave you with some critical questions pulled directly from our sources for you to consider. These are questions that can guide your own further exploration and thinking about TransDigm Group.
Absolutely. First, on the sustainability of pricing power and regulatory risk. Given that past scrutiny from the Department of Defense regarding excess profits, what is the realistic long-term risk of government or regulatory intervention that could impose pricing constraints on defense contracts or even commercial aftermarket parts? How would the business model, which relies so heavily on value-based pricing, adapt to a scenario where margins might be capped? This really is a fundamental challenge to their core profitability engine.
Good question. Second, regarding the M&A endgame and the law of large numbers. As TransDigm continues to grow and get bigger, it just becomes mathematically more difficult to find acquisitions that are both large enough to meaningfully impact its overall growth rate and still meet its strict criteria for proprietary content and aftermarket exposure. What is the estimated size of the remaining universe of potential acquisition targets out there? And at what point might the M&A-driven component of its growth model inevitably begin to decelerate simply because they run out of suitable needle-moving targets? Every growth story eventually faces this challenge of scale.
A very pertinent one. Third, on CEO succession and cultural integrity. The transition to a new CEO is a pivotal moment for any company, but it feels especially critical for one with a culture as unique and disciplined as TransDigm's. How will the new leadership actively ensure the preservation of the company's aggressive, value-focused, private equity ethos? What are the key performance indicators and, maybe more importantly, the capital allocation decisions in the first 12-24 months of the new CEO's tenure that will signal to investors whether that strategic playbook remains fully intact? This is a qualitative but deeply impactful question for the future.
Yeah, watching those first moves will be key. And finally, leverage in a higher-for-longer interest rate environment. While the company has prudently hedged a significant portion of its variable rate debt, as we discussed, a sustained period of higher global interest rates could still present significant challenges. How will this macroeconomic backdrop impact the economics of future acquisitions, which are typically funded with debt? Will deals still make sense at higher rates? And how will it affect the company's ability to refinance its substantial existing debt load on favorable terms over the next 5 to 10 years as those hedges roll off and debt matures? The cost of that engine that fuels the flywheel is absolutely critical. #outro. So what's the ultimate takeaway from all this for you? TransDigm Group is clearly a high-quality business in many respects, but also a high-risk, potentially high-reward proposition. It's certainly not for the faint of heart, given that massive debt pile and the cyclicality. But for those investors with a tolerance for financial leverage and complexity, it offers exposure to one of the most profitable and competitively advantaged businesses in the entire industrial sector. It's a truly fascinating study in how a unique business model can thrive, even with significant structural challenges like debt.
I agree. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the key determinant of long-term success for TransDigm will likely be management's unwavering discipline in three critical areas. First, exercising its formidable pricing power, prudently pushing it, but not so far as to trigger a major regulatory or customer backlash. Second, executing its acquisition strategy, flawlessly continuing to find the right deals, not overpaying, and integrating them seamlessly. And third, prudently managing its highly leveraged balance sheet through all phases of the inevitable economic and credit cycles ahead. Get any of those wrong, and it could unravel.
Well said. And as you think about this deep dive, maybe consider this final provocative thought. TransDigm's model thrives on identifying and acquiring small critical monopolies within the aerospace sector. In an increasingly interconnected and complex world, where else might this private equity playbook operating in public markets be secretly at work? What other niche industries might have their own TransDigms quietly consolidating power? And what does that mean for the future of those industries?
That's a great question to ponder. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into TransDigm Group. We hope you feel better informed and ready to apply that critical thinking to your own explorations. Keep digging deeper.